everyone. I'm Raya Breslin.
And I'm Dia Sharma.
Welcome to Yana LV, where we're on a mission to normalize mental health discussions and foster a supportive community.
Yana stands for You Are Not Alone, and that's exactly what this show is all about. Here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond, we're breaking barriers and challenging the stigma surrounding mental health. Through candid conversations, expert insights, and personal stories, we're exploring the highs and lows of mental health and well-being all together.
Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Keanu Roshan Roos, who is a senior at Moravia Academy. He's interested in reading, learning, and watching sports. He's lived in a variety of countries and is fluent in over 3 languages. In today's episode, we will be talking about his experience with moving and his lived experiences while moving. So, you've lived in places like Detroit, China, Belgium, Boston, and PA. What is it like constantly moving, like, around the world?
I'd say it's kind of a blessing and a curse, because in the moment, it's always terrible to have to pick up and move somewhere new. And, you know, every time I move, I have to, like, completely form new connections. And I try to keep the connections that I had before, but it doesn't normally work out. And I guess one of the hardest things about it is just, like, every place is so different culturally from one another that it's a lot of adjustment. But at the same time, it's really nice to be able to see so many different parts of the world just kind of by going about my life. And, you know, when you live in places, especially outside of the country, as you said, you meet so many people of different cultures that you otherwise wouldn't have. So it's a nice experience, but there's some downsides to it too.
Yeah. And I feel like traveling, like, you get to learn so much about different cultures too. So it gets you, like, so many different insights on so many different topics.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, it's just by having conversations with people around you, it's like when they provide their insights into different issues, you see it from a different lens than you otherwise wouldn't have. Like, it's just, if you're always surrounded by people who think the same way as you, then you don't kind of get the outside perspective of what other people might think.
Yeah. And I also think, like, interacting with different people from around the world also shapes your perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So how did living in so many different cultures shape the way you see the world?
I guess the biggest one is just the idea of acceptance. Like, because when you see someone who has, like, cultural practices that are different than the majority of wherever you're living in, it seems kind of, like, outside or different to you. But when you're living in other places where that's the norm, you kind of understand how everyone, like, you can, when you see it firsthandedly, you better understand how everyone has their own cultural practices. Like, there is no one normal. It's just kind of based on the context that you define normal in.
Yeah, like you said, I think it also depends, like, where you are, where you're from, like, what that normal is in that, like, certain, like, society or community.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I was younger, like, my mom, she would do, so she's a travel agent, and she would, like, set up for all different cultures, and I'm like, even though I wasn't physically going to those places, like, she was able to go to those places, and she would, like, tell me about it. So it's, like, I found it so interesting how, you know, she would go to these places, tell me about their different cultures at such a young age. And I feel like that made me more inspired to keep learning.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, especially in Europe, because in Europe, since there's the European Union, it's pretty easy to travel between countries. And also the countries just aren't that big to begin with, so you can, like, I remember over weekends we would, like, drive down to Italy because we were living in Belgium at the time. You could just drive down to Italy. You didn't really have to go through many borders, and it was pretty easy. So it's just you get to see so many cultures. And, like, even if you're not leaving Belgium, for example, it's just everyone else is coming in and out. You see so many different cultures, and I 100% see what you're saying. Like, you just it's cool to see those other cultures.
Yeah, even, like, for example, like you said, like, in Belgium, I'm sure there's, like, different parts, like, of Belgium that have different cultures within the same country.
Well, like, Belgium's unique because they actually have 3 different governments where Belgium has 3, like, state languages. They have German, French, and then Dutch. Well, it's kind of like a dialect of Dutch called Flemish. And they have, like, different governments for each of those. So even, like, just within Belgians, there's German Belgians, French Belgians, and then, like, Dutch Belgians. And then you meet people from Spain and France and Germany and Portugal, Hungary, Czech Republic coming in and out. It's just, like, it's an amazing experience.
Yeah. And I feel like, honestly, it gives you, like, a gift to, like, because I had no idea what you just said. I had no idea about, like, you know, this information about Belgians and the different languages. Like, I didn't even know what languages they speak there.
Like, yeah, I didn't know, like, there was so much, like, within, like, just one country.
Well, yeah, and again, it's just, like, to everyone, something is important, and depending on where you come from, what is important to you is different, so it's, yeah. like, when you're surrounded by so many people that think differently than you, when you talk to them, and when they talk about what's important to them, it's different from, you know, the last person you spoke to, so you just learn so much more, which is a great aspect of living abroad.
If you could do it all over again, would you want to have lived in so many different places?
I think I would, yeah. I guess what I'd say is, again, I hate the process of moving. Like, it's terrible to have to, you know, pack up your whole house and, you know, move to a place where you don't know anyone, you don't know anything about the area. But in retrospect, I think it definitely made me, like, a better person. I think it made me, like, better able to think holistically, like, consider things in the context of the world rather than just in the context of America or in the context of the city that I'm living in. So, like I said before, I think it's a blessing and a curse, but more so a blessing.
So, was there any one place that felt like most like home, or did you always feel like an outsider?
I'll say China was where people were the kindest to me. Like, people in China are so hospitable, and they were so nice to me. And I don't think that was as much the case in Boston, but in Boston felt more like home to me, just because it was the place I lived the longest. I lived there for about 7.5, 8 years. So I got to form the deepest connections there. And it was also like those 7.5, 8 years were like the end of elementary school, middle school, and then the beginning of high school. So they were like pretty important years of my life.
Yeah.
So the connections that I built there and the things I learned about the area definitely made that what I'd say is the most like home to me.
Yeah. When did you live in China?
So I was, I probably should have said this earlier. So I was born in a suburb of Detroit where I lived for the first year of my life. Then from ages 1 to 5, I lived in Shanghai in China. Then from ages 5 to 9, I lived in Brussels. And then for 7.5, 8 years until I was like 16 and a half when I moved here, I lived in Boston.
Yeah. And I feel like having, like, when you move somewhere with such, like, a different landscapes, like, such a new area, such different culture. I feel like you said in China, like, having people who are treating you with respect, who mm-hmm. are, you know, being so nice to someone who knows so little, is I feel like that makes such a good impression.
Yeah. And also, I think when you're living abroad, you kind of, sometimes you see issues outside of the country that aren't really, like, apparent within mm-hmm. the U.S., but then on the other end of the spectrum, you see things that kind of, like, really good things that are outside of the country you don't see in the U.S. Like, sorry, I don't remember exactly what country it is, but in Southeast Asia, because I wasn't with my parents. My parents went, and they told us about it. In Southeast Asia, there's this temple where they have, like, a synagogue next to a mosque, mm-hmm. next to a church, and, like, all these different religions are all in this one building together, and they all, like, celebrate their religions together, even though they have different beliefs. So I think things like that are really beautiful that you can see outside of the country that sometimes necessarily aren't apparent inside the country.
Yeah, I like you said, like, I feel like your firsthand experience also, like, really shapes, like, your perspective just because then you can, like, you lived it.
So. Yeah, definitely.
So what insight have you gained having lived in so many different places?
Again, I'd probably say just kind of the idea of worldliness, like being able to consider things in a worldwide context, but then also kind of seeing some constants between them. Like, there's certain issues that kind of transcend settings, and like living abroad, you kind of see issues that transcend, like, different, no matter, you know, the race, financial status, age, there's certain issues that transcend all of them, but mm-hmm. at the same time, you kind of see some nations taking different approaches to issues, and sometimes it works for the better, sometimes it works for the worse.
Like, so what would you say is, like, one of the most, like, primary ones that you've seen?
I'd say drug addiction is, mm-hmm. like, the biggest one. That's, no matter where you are, like, whether in you're in Beverly Hills or you're in, like, Boston or you're in Shanghai, Belgium, no matter where in the world you are, drug addiction affects people. And again, like I said, it's one of those issues that really just transcends, like, every aspect of someone's identity. Like, mm-hmm. No one is immune to drug addiction, and it's detrimental to people everywhere.
Yeah. Did you notice any differences in how different countries or communities approach mental health?
Yeah, I think in some countries they talk about it more. Mm-hmm. I think awareness is like the biggest thing. While I think the U.S. isn't necessarily perfect when it comes to their approach to mental health, I think that one of the good things that I've seen, at least in the past couple of years, is people are talking about it more and more. Like you see athletes like Dak Prescott coming out and openly talking about their struggles with mental health, and things like that are really important. Like just normalizing it, having people understand that, you know, everyone's human, everyone's prone to sometimes feeling a little down. I have seen some countries where it's kind of like there's so much emphasis on just working hard and like reaching the end goal of like financial prosperity that they don't really address topics of mental health. So like I said, while I don't think the U.S. is necessarily perfect in terms of their approach to mental health, I think that they're trending in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm from India. So like in India, that like mindset of like you just keep working and working and working. And then it's like if like, for example, like you get sick or you're in the hospital, like you're like not physically well, but if like something happens and like you need to talk to like, you know, a therapist or psychiatrist, like it's just like you doesn't have much like.
Yeah.
Do you think you could like give an example? I don't know, like you're saying how in some places it's different than the others, like how it has like more of a, like a pivotal role, like mentally learning more about mental health and like strategies to cope with it. I don't know, and like the educational sector, like what have you noticed difference between Boston and like China, I'm saying?
Well, in terms of education, I can't really provide that much insight into it because I was pretty young when I lived in China. So it wasn't at an age where they would start talking about that. While I was in Boston, especially like towards the end of middle school and at the, like post COVID, we talked about mental health a lot in school. I think especially since a lot of people were struggling with it right after COVID.
Yeah.
So I can't talk about it from an education standpoint in like China, but I can definitely say that like as Dia said, in some other countries, there's just this culture of like you got to work hard to get your end goal, and it like any sign of like mental struggle along the way is seen as a sign of weakness, which just isn't right.
We're going to be taking a short break. We're talking with our guest Kiana Roshan-Ruse about moving and his lived experiences while moving here on Yana LV. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You've already discovered that this NPR station is an excellent source of news and entertainment, but did you know that this station is a nonprofit? Public radio is for the public, available to all free of charge. That is possible thanks to people just like you who give what they can to support open access to information. So thank you for listening and for making all of this possible.
Call 610-758-8810 or give online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Yana LV. We're here with our guest, Kiana Roshan-Ruse. Now we'll continue our conversation with his experiences with traveling.
When did you first start to notice how widespread drug addiction was that you mentioned before, even across different countries?
It would probably be in Belgium, just because when I was living in China, I was a little too young to notice those things. But in Belgium, they have trams and metros that you use for transportation. And like the metro stations were always filled with like people that were using harder substances. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first time I saw how widespread the drug use was. And beyond that, like once I came back to the U.S. and I would like travel to other countries, I started to see it more and more and just like notice it more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We talked about before we started the episode why you are interested in learning more about addiction. So you had a close friend, right, who struggled with addiction. So how did that experience impact you personally, and how did it, like, impact your mental health?
So this person who was close to me was a little older than me, but he was always, like, a super, super nice person to me. Like, even though he was a little older, he would kind of, I don't know if he really enjoyed it, but he would kind of pretend to enjoy, like, playing Legos with me and teaching me how to play songs on the guitar. Because I was playing guitar at the time. And like I said, I was a little younger, so I didn't really notice anything to be off. But he was struggling with a pretty serious drug addiction at the same time. When I would see him, he wouldn't be using. He was trying to quit at the same time, but it didn't end up working out.
Yeah. I feel like when you're younger and like you're seeing the person, seeing how they act, like you think so differently, and I feel like as you just grow older, like you see how hard life can be on some individuals, and I feel like comparing that, like thinking about and reflecting about those memories you had with your close friend.
And the other thing is, like, when you think about it in retrospect, now knowing that he had been suffering with addiction all the time, you kind of start to realize the small things you didn't notice at the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's kind of made me more aware of those things now, just in general. Just having had that lived experience, I feel like I noticed those smaller signs a little bit more sensitively.
Yeah, especially now that, like, it happened in the past, you, like, kind of, like, think back about it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Did you see any patterns or similarities in how addiction affects people regardless of where they live?
The biggest pattern, I'll say, is people who are struggling with something serious in their life, they kind of use substances as a way to distract themselves. It just goes back to how these, like, substances work chemically in the brain. They give, like, these big rushes of, like, ecstasy and intense feelings of happiness and pleasure. So sometimes when people are really feeling bad mentally, they're having, like, struggles mentally, they kind of use these as a coping mechanism rather than addressing the root of the problem. But the way that these substances work, it actually ends up worsening mental health. So it's kind of just a cycle that continually, like, drags you further and further in.
Yeah, it's like a cycle you can't get out of because you, like, do it for pleasure, but then it kind of, like, makes it worse. Yeah. So,
And I wouldn't say that's necessarily always the case. Like, I mean, some people, addiction starts in different places. Sometimes addiction starts because kids are wanting to study for exams. They can't focus as well. They start, like, taking unprescribed Adderalls, and then it just leads to addiction. So it starts in different contexts all the time, but I'd say the biggest root cause of it that I've seen is probably, like, underlying mental health struggles that they're not, people are either not, they don't realize it themselves, so they can't address it, or they are kind of in a setting where they feel like they don't have a path to addressing the issues at the root, so they just kind of use substances as a coping mechanism.
Yeah,
and honestly, I think, like, I understand what you're saying, like, the, like, with Adderall, like, saying how it doesn't always start in, okay, I want to start, you know, abusing these substances. Like, it can start with, like, I feel like for college kids more specifically, like, they go to a party, like, they try substances like cocaine. And, you know, like, they think it's all fun. They think it's okay, like, one time. And then I feel like it's so normalized now. Like, I see it on social media, too, how people are just using cocaine. I don't know what the right terminology is. Like, abusing cocaine, honestly, so often. Like, it's, like, before tests, before going to the gym, and what is it, like, it's like a stereotype, I guess, that, like, guys on, like, Wall Street in New York and people doing big business, that they have to use these, like, drugs to just keep going, be successful. And I think it is so terrible how people are just normalizing it.
And, yeah, like, I definitely agree with that. And, like, the social media aspect of it plays so much into it, because it's like, you know, if someone's struggling mentally and they see all these people on, you know, different social media platforms promoting the use of, like, you know, marijuana or cocaine or whatever other substances, promoting it, saying, oh, look how amazing it is and look how great my life is while I'm using it. They're like, if this guy's living such a great life, which a lot of times is actually not that great, but they just kind of paint the picture for social media, why is it so bad if I use it? And it's, that's just kind of the beginning, and it just gets worse and worse from there.
Yeah, and I feel like when you're not doing well mentally, like, you're more susceptible to trying things that and you may not even realize it in the moment because of how you're feeling,
just out of desperation.
Like, just trying to find help, and it's just not in the right ways. And just again, that can lead to abuse. And I just think it's so important to really understand how, honestly, and drugs are going to just lead you to a path that is so unhealthy, that is so bad for your body, and that is just, it's just not going to end up well.
Vrana, like you said, people who are at their all-time low or going through a really hard time in their life, they're most likely to use drugs to, like, try and feel better, or, like, nothing worse can happen in their mind.
And again, it's just, like, the way these drugs work chemically is they provide your brain with such a, like, intense feeling of joy by overproducing neurotransmitters like dopamine in your brain that can't be replicated by your body. So then the come down from these drugs, where your brain now is not producing that same level of dopamine or whatever other neurotransmitter it may be, it leaves you feeling actually a lot worse than before, because now it feels like you have this void, and you're, then that's where people who are chasing the high, that's where that comes from, is they're chasing that intense feeling of joy again, because the body can't naturally replicate that because it's just not healthy.
Yeah.
So I feel like we kind of touched on this, like what you wish people really understood more. So is there anything else you would like to add for what do you wish more people understood about addiction and people going through it?
The biggest thing is that at the end of the day, people who are going through addiction are still people. It's a struggle. They're not bad people because they're going through addiction. At the end of the day, it's that they're struggling with something serious and they're using this as their way of coping with it.
They think they might be a bad influence and they might have bad intentions.
Yeah, they just think that because they might have abuse problems, they're just bad, inherently mm-hmm. bad or evil people.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like, it's a cry for help. They're people that are struggling with something mm-hmm. and a lot of times people who are addicts, they don't want to be addicted to the substance. They don't like being so reliant on the substance. But first of all, they don't see a path to quitting it because they're physically they're reliant on it because withdrawals are terrible. Second thing is they don't see a path to having a normal life because being a recovered addict doesn't necessarily make it that easy to get a job or, yeah. Go back to school if that's what you want to do. So I'd say that's a big thing.
Yeah. And I feel like I see it again, about social media. I see it on TikTok. It's people going up. I guess it's some trend now that people go up to homeless people that you can see are struggling and that they're in pain and they're most likely abusing drugs based on their behavior and just making jokes about it or pretending to give them money making them do things as a joke so they could do
it's dehumanizing. Yeah, they treat them like disgusting. They're below everyone else as human beings. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it just makes it worse because then they the people who are seriously struggling with these issues, they see the dehumanizing acts yeah. towards them and they mm-hmm. They feel like there is no path to being a quote-unquote normal person again. But again, it's not drug abuse is horrible, but there's always a path to living a better life. Sobriety, mm-hmm. sober life is the best life. And it's just, it's hard for people who are struggling with serious addictions to see that just because of how they're treated as subhuman or they don't see a path to being able to live a normal life again.
And a lot of people who abuse these drugs or go on this path, they're labeled as addicts, which is not true. It's just one thing that they do to cope and cope with themselves. So
and again, I feel having support is so important, and I feel individuals who are going through addiction, I'm not saying they don't have support, but it's just even if there are people around them, it's so much harder to see. And when you are so low mentally, and it's harder to see who is there for you, and I feel people don't understand that it's hard to see that there are people who support you. It's just they don't realize it because of their...
So based on everything you've seen, how do you think addiction could be better prevented in different places around the world?
I think it just needs to be talked about more. I think it needs to be addressed at a younger age, telling kids that, first of all, showing how there is a direct correlation between use of softer drugs to subsequent use of harder drugs. It's rare that people just experiment with drugs but don't end up trying harder drugs at some point in their life. So that's one thing is I'd say education about it. On the other side of education, also just educating about how, if you're struggling with things mentally, substance abuse is not going to help that. It's mm-hmm. It's going to make the problem worse. So overall, I just think having better infrastructure in place to educate about substance abuse is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, as you said, it's normalizing it into conversations and just talking about it more, I think will help that problem just because then people won't think of it like negative.
Well, it's if you don't, as long as you don't normalize use of it, there's no reason to stigmatize the people who are struggling with the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have people understand that you should prevent it in the first place, but if for whatever reason you're struggling with it already, there is a path to living a better life.
Yeah.
You're not, you shouldn't lose hope of, changing mm-hmm. for the better.
Yeah.
And I also think, I know like, unfortunately, vaping is very popular now. And I feel like that is, even though, like, yes, I know it's not as severe as, like, doing something like cocaine, but I feel like that is just, like, a rabbit hole, if that makes sense. It, like, it's just, it can so easily lead to that. And I feel like that not being, like, I remember even in middle school, it was a thing. Like, it was very popular. It still is popular. It wasn't talked about. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel like you said, like, education, like, something, like, I feel like younger people should really understand how something, like, they think is not as toxic for your body, even though they still don't even know what it does to your body, like, 20 years from now. And I feel like, again, like, how you said, like, being talked about, and I feel like more specific trends of how, what is currently being used, and then also, like,
yeah, because it forms the habits in your body.
Yeah.
And, like, there's been research done that, like, ties use of, like, you know, quote-unquote softer drugs to subsequent use of harder drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you think addiction and mental health are connected to one another?
As I said before, I think, like, people who are struggling with issues of mental health often use drugs as a coping mechanism. So I think, while not always tied together, very frequently, you know, the root cause of the addiction is struggles with mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much for talking about this topic.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I know this topic can be very difficult to talk about for most individuals. It is a very sensitive topic. So thank you again. We're out of time for this episode. Thank you so much, Keanu Roshan Roos, for joining us this evening. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find past episodes and other programs at WDIY.org, on the WDIY app, and on major podcast platforms. I'm Brana Breslin.
I'm Dia Sharma.
And this is WDIY 88.1. We'll see you next time on Yana LV. And remember, you are not alone.